Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight was raised in the Upper Peninsula by his mom, who spoke only Japanese. The state tried to take him and his siblings from his mom, and she learned to read and write by listening to Ernie Harwell on WJR. Today, he's the president of Michigan Orthopedic Services and the founder and CEO of Morgan Bradley. He and his wife, Lisa, are the founders of Random Acts of Kindness. His name, Tim Codd. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Tim Codd, the founder and CEO of Morgan Bradley. Tim, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you very much, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your parents?
Thank you. Yes, we can. Thank you. I don't know where to begin because she has been such an influence in my life. So I guess if you could sum it up in a short answer, the reason why I am who I am and where I am is because of her.
Talk about your mom and your dad.
Well, the vivid memory that I have of my dad was the night that he left. I remember being upstairs in a little farmhouse in Bruce Crossing. And we weren't in Bruce Crossing, so that even, I'll give you a little bit of perspective, was about 5 miles outside of Bruce Crossing. And Bruce Crossing is about 1,000 people in a 25-square-mile area. And then the other memory I have of my dad is when he was described as a Santa Claus dad. Always happy to see us, but that didn't happen very often. My mom, again, was the rock, a person of very few words, taught through example and touch. An emotion that was always controlled. And it's said often that you learn more by watching and listening than you do actually from what they have to say. And it was a great example, and I carry those memories very vividly.
Your mom only spoke Japanese.
Correct.
How did this Japanese woman ever get to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan?
Well, that's a great story because, you know, she was born in 1931. And I'm sure most people can understand during that time as a kid, you know, they were living under horrendous times in the country of Japan, in the city of Sendai, which is northern Japan, and which I've never been. She met my father, who was on leave during the Korean War. And he was, a happy-go-lucky Irishman, full of laughs and probably full of a lot of other stuff, too. And she made him a promise that if he stopped drinking, she would go out with him. And obviously fell in love and married at the U.S. Embassy. And because the media wasn't as obviously available, she thought coming to America was New York City, Chicago, Hollywood, all the bigger cities. And when he surprised her by putting her in Bruce Crossing, which is on the tropical side of Ontonagon County, it really wasn't Chicago. And that's how she got there. That's how she came to America.
One day the sheriff showed up at the front door to take you, your sister, and your two brothers away from your mom. Talk about that.
Yeah. We always knew that I'm in a small town, and you always saw the police car and the officer or the sheriff, and he showed up at our door. And I remember answering it. And he asked if my mom was home. And of course, she was, during the day, never home because she worked 6 days a week and spent all day on Sunday preparing for the week for us, cooking meals and meals and meals for the whole week. So I let him in. And he obviously looked at the house and saw that there were dishes that were piled up and clothes, because the laundry, the washer and dryer were right there. He saw the pile of clothes. And he basically said that this was a place for, you know, that wasn't a place for kids, and that my mom was deemed unfit mother. And they found out that she was, at that time, not an American citizen. So they came to take us away.
How did she counteract that?
Again, one of those amazing skills that I think good parents have, and that was instinct. And she fought by making a couple of phone calls, one to her manager where she worked. It was the co-op store. And if anybody's familiar with a community store, it was the feed mill, it was the gas station, it was the, if you will, the slaughterhouse or the meat farm. And that manager, plus one of the competitors, little grocery store, she called Tom Nordine. And then I remember that vividly because he was, again, a great man with very few words. And they called the county house. And they rallied around my mom and made sure that she signed up to be a citizen. And basically, I remember the comment coming from Arvo Pertu, who was the store manager, there isn't a better parent that we know of other than Masako Khan.
What role did Ernie Harwell announcing the Tiger Games on WJR play in your life?
Again, and thanks to you, Jack, you made that meeting possible. It was very emotional to actually meet the guy that my mom would make sure that we gathered around, because she saw our interest in sports. And little did I know that she was doing this to help herself, because we would get the Ironwood Daily Globe a day after the game. And she would listen to the game. And then I would see her not reading the front page, but always reading the Tiger game. So she would remember the play-by-play of Ernie Harwell. And if you look back on how they wrote stories, the play was, or the stories were very descriptive. So she could remember the Al Kaline hits and the stolen bases and relate the names to the verbs. And that's her basic understanding of the English language.
We're talking to Tim Codd, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Crisula.
Welcome back. We're talking to Tim Codd, the principal and president of Michigan Orthopedic Services. Tim, you grow up in the UP. You're raised by a mom who only speaks Japanese. And now you're the president of two companies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How'd you ever get the dream to start businesses? And how'd you ever get the courage to do that?
Well, that is a great question. I think we should study and present to most kids, because I never knew I couldn't. My mom never put us into a place where we were told we couldn't do something. You know, knowing what I witnessed with my mom and how religiously, how consistently she took us to church, how she practiced, again, in her humble, quiet way, kindness. And she just kept encouraging us. And she had every, you know, looking back, she had every reason to give up. It's amazing, because we never were on welfare, because she didn't even know it existed. When my dad left, it was amazing, because she called the local store and said, is there anything I can do? And she started bagging groceries because Arvo Pärtu, the store manager, would see her come in once a week with my dad so she could go grocery shopping. And that's all they knew of this lady of four kids. And we all walk in a line. And but she was always there to make sure that there the possibilities were reachable. And that's why, you know, where I am today is because I don't really see a boundary.
Today, you're the president of Michigan Orthopedic Services, and it is a major provider of artificial limbs and braces in Southeast Michigan.
Yes, sir.
Can you talk about that business?
Yeah. Again, it's so rewarding and humbling and satisfying because it's where you build artificial limbs and braces, and you're helping people every day. And you get a cross-section of trauma where suddenly they have to adjust their lives. You get cases where you have people who actually have control over their lives and don't exercise that control and get into situations where they actually lose a limb. And it's encouraging to see that we surround ourselves with people who really care. And they wouldn't be in the profession if they didn't. So I'm really quite fortunate to have that kind of a mix. And it's interesting because the beginning of it was, I don't think the Michigan Orthopedics was any bigger than the studio. And, you know, I get a kick out of it when I tell the story to the employees. My partner and founder, Aziz Nasser, took his life savings and said, you know, this is my dream, I'm going to live it. And I think... we are probably the within the top two companies in the state of Michigan right now, and I can proudly say that.
What have you learned from your patients?
Anything is possible. You know, it's we did a wonderful, wonderful thing for a young man who actually played varsity basketball. And he lost his leg when he was 10 years old to cancer. To see the eyes light up, to see the smile, and he's with one leg. It goes right back to the essence of your program, Jack. I mean, it shows that if you really have the will, the strength, the courage, the discipline, all the virtues, that I don't think we spend enough time with our kids truly defining those hard, mature words. There isn't anything you can't do. And that's what I enjoy most about, you know, seeing the successes of each and every patient.
You're also the founder, CEO, and president of Morgan Bradley.
Yes, sir.
What does Morgan Bradley do?
Thank you. Well, Morgan Bradley, it's interesting because we're not a toy company and we're not a brokerage firm. Morgan is my oldest daughter, and Bradley is the youngest son of my partner. Therefore, it's called Morgan Bradley. And we are a consulting company. We emphasize IT, and what we try to do is define assets and strategically place those assets, whether they're IT, and mostly they are, and utilize them more effectively in the marketplace. And sometimes they're not. They're usually the expense side of a balance sheet. And I think technology has been the reasons why this country and you know, companies have been so successful. But there's so much more that they can do. And that's what Morgan Bradley is doing.
If some listener out there has a dream to start a business and own a business, run a business, what advice would you give them?
Well, first of all, don't be afraid to get advice. Surround yourself with people that are so much brighter than you. Again, one of those things back to my mom, and she never got more than, I think, a sixth grade education, but she never talked about it because I think she was embarrassed. She always said, learn and listen. Get advice. People are a lot smarter than you, so take advantage of that in a very wholesome way. And starting a company, surround yourself with people that are so much better than you. And I don't mean that from a Harvard degree or University of Michigan degree. I mean it in their hearts. Because if you really care about the project or the product and the company and your people, the possibilities of success are so much greater because you never really think about failure. You're always thinking about, you know, the next day, the next opportunity, the tomorrow.
I admire you for a lot of reasons. You're very good at a lot of things. One of the things you're best at is networking, which is so critical in today's world. How does one become a great networker?
Well, again, you know, I keep referring to my mom, and I apologize for it, but I'll never apologize to her. Sincerity. You know, people talk about value propositions and the business case, and in networking, you'll be amazed by working a room how many people are actually sincere and how many people will actually follow up and do what they say they will do. And I can't say I'm perfect at it. It's hard work, but it's also enjoyable because you truly get to know the person. And I got a great example. I'm playing basketball on a Saturday morning. And week after week after week after week, I see this wonderful basketball player who's probably 10, 15 years older than I am. And it got to be about the third or fourth month we've been playing consistently, and I asked him, so what do you do? And he humbly says, well, I work at this company. So a couple of months go by, and I'm trying to network and know the landscape. I subscribe to Cranes. Now, this is 20 years ago. And they have this section in there called the top compensated executives. And I look on there, and there's that guy's name.
Who is that guy?
And he will be smiling when I say this. His name was Larry Haggerty. And I've learned so much by him saying so little. And I found out about that he was on that list. And when I asked him about it, you could see he was embarrassed. So that shows you his humility and how humble he was, but how, you know, what kind of a guy he really is. And he was embarrassed. And he says, it was unfortunate. I had no control over that article.
We're talking to Tim Codd. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Crisula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Tim Codd, who is also the cigar supplier for the Palace of Auburn Hills. Tim, you're great at multitasking. You got so many things, you know, businesses, networking, charity. Talk about multitasking.
Well, knowing my roots and seeing what was possible, I don't think twice about it. Again, it's instinct, and it goes back to, you know, I'm tending to repeat myself, but I think that's part of the what I see in successful people. You know, the many people that you've had on your show. It's surrounding yourself with talent, and making decisions that you need to make. And you reward the people that deserve it, and you take the risks that you measure. I truly believe that people, good people, and people with potential are your greatest assets. And the cigar opportunity came via Jerry Stackhouse, and he was a guy that I got a chance meeting, and we became friends, and he got a phone call from Mr. Wilson and said, you know, come by, we got this concept that we're going to have over at the Palace. And it's a private club and et cetera. So would you come by, Jerry, and give us your feedback? And Jerry calls me up. He goes, Tim, I have no idea what a country club is or a private club. Would, you know, you come with me? So Mr. Wilson and his team are giving us the if you will, the tour. And it comes down to the back end of it. And he says, so what do you think it's missing? I looked at it and I remember, you know, being part of country clubs. I think it's missing a cigar room. And Mr. Wilson goes, great idea. Do you know anybody in the business? I called my attorney and we started a company.
We're talking to Tim Codd, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Tim Codd. Tim and Lisa have five children. Their oldest is Morgan. She's special to you. Can you talk about Morgan?
I would love to. Morgan is 13 years old. She is our gift. She's described or defined as severely autistic, or SMI, severely mentally impaired. She's nonverbal. And has a seizure disorder. And as I said, she's the anchor in our house.
When did this come about?
Well, the day she got her immunizations, she had her first seizure. And it was at 1 in 1,000,000 chances, or 1 in 100,000. And we just dismissed it as a seizure, and we obviously scared parents and gone through the typical emergency room experience. And then her second seizure happened during her second immunization. And then the seizures tended to become more and more frequent. And then trying to get some seizure control, and she was developing. She was counting to 20 and singing songs with us and dancing. A typical, maybe delayed in development, but a typical little two-year-old, but again, having terrible seizure activity.
I'm always amazed at how often parents with special needs children refer to them as our teacher, our hero, our angel from God. A few minutes ago, you referred to her as our gift. Why is that?
Again, you know, you watch and you learn and you listen. And one thing that I can say, I have five kids, five beautiful kids. And Morgan's the oldest. And we never stopped having kids, even though we were advised to. One thing that my 8-year-old and my 6-year-old and now my 3-year-old are experiencing is that Morgan hasn't changed. But my little girls, Casey and Lexi, and now T-Bone, my 3-year-old, they are changing. So to watch them see Morgan stay in a constant state and witness the challenges that Morgan presented when Casey, who's now 8, at 3, and Casey sees that Morgan's still Morgan. And the same thing, Lexi. So she's taught us how to be patient, how to forgive, how to discipline, how to be kind, how to be helpful and supportive. And it's reflective in the compliments that I get about my kids, my 8-year-old and my 6-year-old, and how kind they are to everybody.
Recently, I heard you say that Morgan has taught you how to be a better husband.
Yes.
In what way?
Well, when I met my beautiful wife, who you've met, 17 years ago, you see all the beauty, you see all the happiness, you see all those visible things, and you see the things that you fall in love with. But you never see how they handle a crisis. You never see how they handle lack of sleep. And I can say this with a bit of emotion. Gosh, he's the toughest thing I know. And one of the things I remember watching my mom grow up was how she dealt with adversity but never showed it. You know, quite frankly, I thought I was rich. And yet we were, you know, probably closer to food stamps than anybody that I know. But that's what Lisa does too. And the gift of Morgan and having me see that so differently than what I married makes it all the more richer.
What has Morgan taught your other four children?
Oh, I think Casey is going to save the world. And she's my 8-year-old because she knows Morgan needs so much help. She sees what a seizure is. And it's fortunate or unfortunate, how you may want to look at it, how violent a seizure can be. And for Casey to see and help in those situations is, I don't think that comes to a 8-year-old very often. My 6-year-old has the spirit of a middle guard for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Yet it has taught her how to be soft and caring. My 3-year-old is in that battle stage right now because Morgan loves her space. And if you get inside her space or take her puzzle or piggy bank, she will come after you. And T-Bone is fighting. But that's the consistency that Casey went through, that Lexi went through, and now T-Bone's going through. So it just brought us closer together and really defined, without having to say it, what giving is about.
If there's some parents out there or grandparents out there tonight that have a special needs child, grandchild, and they get mad at God sometimes, what would you tell them?
We were there. You know, I was making deals. I was playing Kenny Holland and Joe Dumars. I was trading places. I was begging. You know, how could you do this? Because Morgan was at one stage in a coma for almost 7 days. And we were praying by the bedside and we didn't have any answers. But life is a marathon. And it really taught us the blessings that we have because of what you just heard. The gifts that it gave me as a husband, me as a father, and the gifts it has given Casey and Lexi. It is a gift because you wouldn't have the experiences that we have in order to be better husbands, better fathers, better partners, better corporate citizens, better parents. So you have to be patient, and nothing survives that, I can say this with a great deal of conviction, nothing survives unless you put the time and the will into it. And he would have never given us this beautiful gift if we couldn't have handled it.
Recently, Peter Nielsen, I was listening to him, and he gave his philosophy of life, and part of it, he said, "I asked God to make my special needs child whole. God said, his spirit is whole. His body is only temporary." How does that speak to you?
Well, again, probably one of the greatest assets that I have is my wife. And she says the only guarantee we have in life is that Morgan's going to heaven. We have to work at it. That's a lesson that I would share with everybody. I mean, your special needs child is here to make sure and probably give us the resources that we need to get there, because they're going there, and I firmly believe that.
We're talking to Tim Codd. When we come back, we'll ask him about the charity that he and Lisa founded, Random Acts of Kindness. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Tim Codd. Tim, you're very involved with many charities in town. How did you first get involved with a non-for-profit?
Well, going back to why I think I am where I am, humbly speaking, and it's because certain people come into your lives that get you involved, and you listen to them, and I would call them mentors. And when I describe a Larry Haggerty like I did, and he's embarrassed that I would call him a mentor, but a guy named John Cuton, who at the time was the CFO of Providence Hospital, and Michigan Orthopedics was a small little company, and he was a CFO on the street that the word was he would call everybody back once. And I went to him and I said, I got a little proposition or proposal for you. And we built artificial limbs and braces. And he brought me into his room. And I gave him the spiel and blah, blah, blah. And he says, gosh, you know, maybe we can do something together. And I got involved with the Providence Health Foundation. And it was amazing because it was an exposure that I have never been involved with. And I saw a lot of good people doing a lot of good work. And in any real foundation, you're going to see just a handful do so much for everything and everybody. So it inspired me.
You and Lisa started Random Acts of Kindness. Tell us about that.
Thank you. Again, going back to watching my mom, and I'll never forget one of the stories, and I can't quite remember what the reason was, but I was hurt and disappointed and frustrated because I didn't make something. And I'll never forget, she says, go out in the yard or in the woods and try to find something and feed it. Find the dog and make it feel better. I'm looking at her, I said, I feel terrible. What do you mean? And her quote was, if you make something else feel better, you will. You never have a bad day if you're giving. And I've never forgotten that. So I'm fortunate beyond most people's, I should say, measures. And we want to do what we can so our kids witness the giving. And one of the things that we started was this Random Acts of Kindness, because there are so many wonderful organizations out there calling for gifts and money and to help so many things. And again, I got close to a number of different people, one being Kenny Holland and Jerry Stackhouse and Dave Lewis and Joey Koser. And they were being pulled so many different ways. And Lisa and I says, you know, if we put our resources together and we adopt various charities that come to us with meaningful objectives, and, you know, let's try to spread as much of our energy and resources to reach as many as we can. And that was the essence behind Random Acts of Kindness and the mission to get my kids involved so that they learn the art of giving.
You were a star athlete in high school. You've got a great story about homecoming. Can you share that with us?
Well, star athlete is interpretive. It was a small Class D school, and yeah, we were bigger than most. Just ask us, and that was kind of the talk, too. Again, going back to my mom, we had this special young lady that was really a gift because she was our little special needs classmate, and her name was Connie Jupri. And she was, I don't think, any taller than 4 feet, 3 inches. And I was on the basketball team, and she grew up with me. And of course, you know, kids are innocent and mean, and we became close friends, and she was my prom or my homecoming date. And became close friends forever.
You're always giving. You're always giving somebody the benefit of the doubt, a second chance. Many people would say, Tim, be real. In today's world, in this state, in this times, you got to look out for yourself. It's doggy dog. What do you say to them?
That's a good question, Jack. And that goes back to one of your questions when you said, are you mad at God for giving you Morgan? You know, and maybe this interview is going to surprise a few people, but it's based on faith. You know, people are going to screw you if they want to anyway, no matter what you put in place legally and financially, etc. And I firmly believe that there's enough goodness out there to be successful. And sometimes success always isn't measured in financially. You know, it's holistically, it's spiritually, it's faithfully, it's how you want to be. And this is what I try to tell my kids. How do you want to write your own book? Not literally, but just people are going to look back on you one day and they're going to remember you. And unfortunately, if you do something poorly, they'll remember that, more so than they will remember all the goodness that you do. So try not to make those kinds of mistakes. And have I made a bunch where I've trusted a lot of corporations and business partners and stuff? Yes, I have. But those were yesterday. And you spend your energy not getting even. You spend your energy trying to get ahead.
What advice would you give the single moms listening tonight, struggling to keep bread on the table and to raise their family?
First, raise your family. This is a wonderful country, and there are so many possibilities and resources available if you just ask for it. But raise your family. Spend as much time as you can. And I know it sounds easier than it actually is, because I witnessed it. I was there. And spend your time on hope. Spend your time encouraging. My mom, I can never remember once an excuse. I never knew the word excuse. And she always said, and she didn't always say it, she just practiced it. If you want people's sympathy, you're not getting their respect. And people that respect you will give you sympathy when you need it.
What do you say to couples, young couples, who say, we're so busy right now trying to raise the family, earn the almighty buck, keep the jobs. We want to give back, but we don't have time to give back now, Tim.
Well, then I would consider, you're a steward of your own ship. This society is calling for great examples. And I think it's hard work to share your parenting and your family to the community, because we need more examples of good parenting, of good families. And I would encourage that, to do it as a family.
What role has faith played in your life?
Well, I try not to speak it. I try to practice it. But I begin every day and end every day recognizing the gifts and the blessings that I have.
What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
I got a book that I count on, and it's called The Book of Virtues, written by William Bennett. And it talks about the virtues: courage, discipline, spirituality. And those are hard words for a young person. And it takes, whether it's a big brother or a parent, to share those examples, not definitions, but examples. And I would surround myself around people that you want to be. And then I would practice it. It's hard work, but I'm in a living example of it.
Tim, your mom this evening is looking down and is beaming with pride. You are an embodiment of her. So thanks for that. Thanks for all the good that you and Lisa do. Please keep it up.
Thank you very much, Jack.
Our guest next Sunday will be the founder and president of the Sphinx Organization, Aaron Dworkin. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spalding.